You're supposed
to introduce Brian first, didn't you know that?
Yeah.
Hi, my name's Brittany. I'm an addict.
Hey, Brittany.
This retreat means a lot to me because I feel like this is where I really started to pick up a lot of the pieces and grow as a person. My clean date is November 27th of 2010, and I hold that date very near and dear to my heart. You know, when I got clean, I really didn't have much of a personality left, aside from the using addict. Like, I was a shell of a person. A little bit about my circumstances, what brought me to recovery. I used, you know, on and off from a young age, and I used to cover up feelings. I was an anxiety-ridden teenager. I went through some family trauma whenever I was 8 with my mother passing away. So there was a lot of different emotions. And when I found drugs, that was my way to escape. And I found that I could use and not have to face reality. And so that's what I spent, you know, my entire adolescence doing, is just trying to escape reality. And it didn't matter what, but, you know, once I found my drug of choice, I went off to the races and running. And it didn't take long at all for, like, my world to start crashing around me. I was 23 when I got clean, and to me that's a miracle. And I admire the kids that I see come in here, because it was no easy task for me. A lot of, you know, rationalization went into my using, saying that, like, I was just young. But the fact of the matter was, is at 23, I was supposed to be an adult. Part of my story is that I got married at a young age. I became a nurse, and that was, like, what was important to me, and that's what I held on to. It was my career. And when I got clean, the circumstances surrounding that were that, like, I was about to lose everything. At the time that I got clean, I lost my job, was about to be evicted from my home. Of course, we all know that there was no money, and the person that I was not a person. I felt like an absolute monster. I destroyed all relationships with my family, my parents, my brothers, my sisters, my friends. I had nobody left except for using acquaintances, and those were falling off quickly too. Because once we get to a point, like, even we don't want to be around each other. I didn't want to be around myself, so I could very well understand how nobody else wanted to be around me. You know, circumstances came to light that, like, I lost my job and I was about to lose my license to practice as a nurse, and I share it, like, that was the only thing at the time that could have caused me to get clean. Like, that was the only thing that meant anything to me, and it was the only thing that I had left. And it was because of that that I felt like I was keeping up appearances for so long. The fact that I still held a job, and was successful and had gone through college, but, like, that quickly, you know, all dissipated. And I made the decision to go to rehab and to get clean, and it wasn't an easy task. I didn't stay clean out of rehab. I wish that I could tell you that I did, but, you know, that was part of my process. Relapse was part of my process and part of my higher power showing me that I was truly an addict. You know, I had all of my consequences laid out in front of me, and I used despite knowing what they are. I used against my own will, and that, to me, is the definition of an addict. Like, I made a conscious choice every day that I woke up, like, today I wasn't going to use, and 9 times out of 10, if I found the means and ways, like, I was high. So eventually, you know, I came around and I went to rehab, and I took some suggestions, but, like, I was going to pick and choose what suggestions I wanted to take. So I was going to get a sponsor, but was I going to use that sponsor? No. And I went back to a very unhealthy environment. You know, the suggestion was made to me to be completely honest, and I was unable to do so. I, you know, lied about my circumstances, about my significant other at the time, and I went back to a totally unhealthy environment, and sure enough, I was high within the week. I don't even think I made it 3 days, to be honest with you, but everything's such a blur that it's hard to remember. But what I do remember is that absolute pain and desperation and not wanting to go on. You know, growing up, I was a suicidal teenager. I dealt with a lot of depression. I had a lot of different feelings of abandonment from my mom passing away. She passed away as a direct result of this disease. My dad is in recovery. My dad is going to be celebrating 24 years next month, which to me is an absolute miracle. And I don't hold him on a pedestal, but I look up to him and I value his recovery. And through this process, you know, I've come to appreciate the gift that it really is. And I was exposed to the other fellowship, to Alcoholics Anonymous, at a young age. And what's funny is I never had remembered that I was. But the funny thing is that I went to retreats and stuff. Like, I remember going camping with my family, with him, and like, I put two and two together 20 years later that camping was AA retreats. You know, I remember being a kid and throwing fits, having to sit through meetings and stuff. Not that he required me to go to that many, but, you know, it's the beauty. And, like, I remember having a lot of fun, and it's a blessing today to be able to be on the other side of this and be here. And, you know, I got clean, and I had some choices to make. Like I said, I can't really say that I had a moment of clarity. Some people talk about, you know, waking up and they have this spiritual, like, epiphany, that they realize what they're doing. Like, I had many of those. Like, I, you know, had many awakenings, that I realized that I was an addict, you know, in my process of trying to get clean, but, like, they never stuck with me. The only thing that stuck was getting through a day at a time. When I got clean, I didn't intend to stay clean. And that was just the matter of the fact. When I got clean, I was just going to take a break. That was all that I wanted, because I was absolutely worn out. And I was tired of trying to beat the system. Like, I was under surveillance by the state, and I just wanted a break. I wanted to stop running for a little bit. And, you know, my significant other at the time, like, we mutually decided that we would take breaks. And, you know, I don't really know what was on his side of the street, whether or not he did, but I ended up with, like, two weeks abstinent, you know, looking back on those 2 weeks and realizing, like, hey, I got through some time without using. And I remember that first obsession that I had to use, whenever I had that moment that, like, maybe I can do this. I remember picking up the phone and finally taking a suggestion and calling somebody and talking through it. And it gave me a little bit of hope. And I remember starting to be a little bit more receptive to what people were talking about in meetings, and to listening a little bit more, and to sharing a little bit more honestly, and to putting stuff out there, you know, that I was struggling with. And that's when freedom really started to happen for me. Like, I can remember the first time sharing openly in a meeting about what was going on in my home life, that I felt this sense of freedom afterwards. And, like, I felt like people could relate, and people talked to me afterwards and gave me their experience, strength, and hope. And that, to me, proved, you know, that, like, maybe I could do this for a little bit. I still didn't think that I was going to accumulate any amount of clean time. Like, I really, the person that I was at the time had no faith in myself. You know, I tried to keep up appearances for all intents and purposes, and to you know, try to be something that I wasn't when I came into these meetings, to act like I had everything together. But the truth of the matter was, is I was completely falling apart, and so was my entire life. I hated myself, absolutely hated myself, could not look at myself in the mirror and hold my head high. when I came into the program of Narcotics Anonymous, I could not look you in the eye. That was just, the sheer thought of it, like, made me nervous and made me shake with anxiety. It was just, my first meeting to come into was absolutely horrifying. I'll never forget, like, sitting in the back trying to pretend like I wasn't there, trying to pretend like other people didn't exist, trying to run out as fast as possible. And, like, I did this for a certain period of time until, like, I was so broken that I just couldn't do it anymore. And I got a sponsor, but I didn't use her. Like, I thought that I didn't need a sponsor. And, like, when I finally started to get some time, and by time I mean like days, when I started to put a couple days together, you know, I started to open my ears and I started taking some suggestions and calling a sponsor. And I'll never forget her telling me that I needed to call her every day and coming up with excuses as to why I couldn't, and then her making suggestions to me that I didn't want to take, so I fired her and got a new sponsor, somebody that would co-sign my stuff. And that only prolonged the pain for me. And, you know, one of her suggestions was that I leave the relationship that I was in. And I was so codependent at the time, like, it was unfathomable for me to do so. So I fired her. And I found another sponsor. And she really didn't approach the subject with me, so I thought that it was okay. And I started to watch, you know, people in the rooms, and I started to look for qualities in people that I strove for myself. I looked at women that had their stuff together, and, you know, I looked at people that, you know, could sit in a room, that could talk, that didn't stutter over every word, and these are the people that I started to surround myself with, and it wasn't easy. It's tough to be a newcomer, to come into a program, and, you know, I think it was self-reflection on my part that I thought that nobody wanted to be around me, but that wasn't the truth. Like, I didn't want to be around anybody, and I pushed everybody away, but I started to open up a little bit, and I found one or two people that I could talk to, and slowly that turned into more. And when I celebrated probably 90 days, the obsession and compulsion started to be lifted. That was the miracle to me, when the first day that I woke up and I immediately didn't think of using, and I thought, like, maybe I can do this, just maybe. And I started to share, and I found a different sponsor, somebody who I admired, who I saw working the program, living spiritual principles. I watched the way that she carried herself outside of meetings, and I wanted to be like her. I wanted to be able to sit in my own skin, because that was absolutely something that I could not do. So I asked this woman to sponsor me, and I started to work some steps. And the freedom for me is in the steps. Recovery means nothing to me. Like, being clean is not what I want. Being abstinent's not what I want. I want recovery today. When I started working my first three steps, it was my higher powers, you know, work in my life, that I noticed that things started to align with what step I was on. Like, there were different principles and different, I got the opportunity to practice spiritual principles with each step. And the opportunities were presented in front of me, where I was able to, you know, really work on the step. Like, the first step, you know, was putting down the drugs and to surrendering and to actually take these suggestions and, you know, working the steps and to start doing a 90 and 90 and going to meetings, and to start using my sponsor. And the second step was, for me, like, watching other people get clean and having a little bit of hope that, like, you know, maybe this can work for me. Like I said, mine was not an instantaneous, like, I'm going to do this recovery. It was a process for me, and that's the way it was. And the third step was one of the harder steps for me to work. I was in a relationship that was absolutely miserable. and I was working as a waitress, and I had a lot of, you know, issues that were difficult for me to deal with. Like, I learned a lot of humility in those first 9 months, learning, like, you know, that being a nurse was no longer my identity. I am Brittany. I'm an addict. I'm a recovering addict. I'm a daughter. You know, I'm so many more things than just a nurse. Not that that isn't something that I'm proud of, but that doesn't define me. And I started to, you know, realize these things in this program. And at 9 months, I was working as a waitress. I got clean in the South Hills area of Narcotics Anonymous, and, you know, it came to, certain things started to be revealed in my life, and, like, with a little bit of self-clarity, I started to, you know, reflect on the people that were around me, and I started to notice different behaviors, and the evidence that, you know, my husband at the time was using. Like, there was no trying to deceive my way out of it anymore. Like, he absolutely was using, and I just remember, like, confronting him and thinking that, like, maybe we could work through this and whatnot. But, you know, it was difficult. Like, I grew up in Narcotics Anonymous. When we had met, I was, you know, using the entire relationship, and I did not know who I was. And I remember him talking to me and saying, you know, you're not the same person that I married. And I said, absolutely not. Like, I never was that person. Like, that person that you married really was just a product of drugs. I remember having conversations with my dad. You know, my dad struggled with it with my mom. She chose to use while he remained sober, and she got a little bit of time under her belt, not a whole lot, about 8 months, and it just took one night of her relapsing, and she passed away that night. So I watched their relationship, and they had gone through divorce and remarriage, and even though I was young at the time, like, I remembered, and I was aware of what was going on, and I had an older brother and an older sister who were able to fill in the pieces for me, and my dad was open with me, too. He was able to share his personal experience with me and tell me, you know, I remember him telling me right out the gate, like, you know, he did not think, he was hopeful that my marriage might last, but, you know, not to put all my eggs in that basket, that I needed to develop myself as a person. And it was finally, like, it came to fruition one day that I woke up and I made the choice that, like, it was either going to be my recovery or it was going to be this relationship, and this relationship might mean the death of us. Like, I was already emotionally dead in that relationship. There was nothing left of a relationship. It was absolute chaos. And even though I was clean at the time, living in the chaos of another addict is just, it's as if I was using. When I had left that relationship and made the decision to move back in with my parents, you know, it was a tough decision. It wasn't easy by any means, but I was working my third step, and I was praying diligently on my third step, asking for my higher power to reveal to me, like, what I was supposed to be doing so that I could have faith in this process. And part of that faith was taking the blind leap that, like, I need to absolutely drop everything in my life. I left my everything. Like, I left with a suitcase and a beat up car. And, you know, my car had just been wrecked the night before by him. And I didn't even know if I was going to make it home. Like, I had to have faith that that car was going to get me home that day, because it was, you know, 45 minutes from Pittsburgh to New Stanton. And, you know, I did make it home with, and the following weeks, I drove around with a gallon of water for whenever my radiator overheated. You'd see me pulled off to the side of the road waiting for it to cool down and throw water in it. And I made it to meetings like that. My very first day that I moved home, I made it to a meeting. And that was the change for me, because now my brain had switched paths in recovery, like, that, you know, I had some action involved. Like, the action for me was to go to a meeting, to throw my stuff out there, to tell people what was going on in my life. To say, like, hey, I'm, you know, I've got 8 or 9 months clean, however long I had. I just moved back to this area. Like, this is what's going on. I need phone numbers. And then going out with people after that. And that was, like, the first day of freedom that I felt in a long time. And I had a lot of hope. And, like, my sponsor stuck by my side. And, you know, she was calling me and letting me know that she was there. And she would pick up my phone call anytime that I called, because she knew what I was going through at the time. And, you know, she led a busy life, but she made time for me and she knew what I was going through. And I reached out to other women. I reached out to one of my previous sponsors, knowing that she had been through a similar situation in her life. And that's the hope of this room, like, you know, that there were no resentments harbored towards one another. Like, that showed some growth on both of our parts, that, you know, I could come to her and ask her for guidance and she was able to share her experience with me. Slowly, I started to get things back in my life. You know, I didn't take the most glorious jobs right out the gate, but my higher power, like, God's time and my time is completely different, and I'm thankful for that, because if I would have my time, I would have ended up high right out of the gate. His plan was a little bit different for me. Like, I was released to go back to work with 3 or 4 months clean, and he didn't see fit that I go back to work in my profession until I had a year clean. And I learned some acceptance about that. It was a blessing to me when I did. You know, part of this process for me is, like, I had my boss at the time fire somebody else because they said something about me being a recovering addict. And, you know, she stood up for me. And that was the first time in my life that I ever had somebody really go to bat for me. And it just showed me a lot of hope. And, you know, I started to reach out to women in my new area. And the feeling that I had, like, I realized that Narcotics Anonymous is not just, like, one region. You know, that we are a worldwide fellowship. And I can go, no matter what's going on in my life, I can go to any meeting and share where I'm at. And somebody there can relate. And that's just, you know, that's, like, it gave me complete awe, and gave me some serious gratitude for this program that I never had before, because I was totally resentful that I was an addict prior to that. You know, step work is really what changed my life. I would have never been able to speak in front of any group of people whenever I came here. Like I said, I absolutely shook at the thought of just sitting in a room with other people. And here I am today, able to share my story. And it's the greatest blessing that I could ever ask for, that, like, I start to feel comfortable in my own skin. Like, that's part of getting my life back. That's the most important part of getting my life back, is being okay with myself. Like, the material stuff for me is nice. And the relationships are nice, but the relationship with myself and my higher power is the greatest blessing that I've had throughout this journey. I'm able to look in the mirror and to be okay with the things that I've done that day, that week. And there are still times that I act out on character defects on a daily basis. But I have the ability today, through some step work, to recognize those character defects and to work on them. You know, I went back to work, and some of the material stuff, that was, like, what my hope shot was whenever I first came in here. I used to listen to people share, because when I came in here, I was getting food out of from a food bank. My electricity was shut off, like, when I had maybe, like, 6 months clean. Like, all these things started to, the domino effect, where, like, most people come in and they're absolutely broken and have lost everything. All of my stuff started to fall away whenever I, you know, had, like, 6 months clean, because that was just the wreckage of the past finally catching up to me, because I ran from it for so long. And so I had all this stuff going on, and when I first came in, that was part of what kept me around, was hearing other people give their leads and share and, you know, have the nice cars and have this and that. And, like, those were the hope shots that that kept me coming back because I wanted those things. I wanted a car that I didn't have to pour a gallon of water in to get from point A to point B. I wanted to be able to, you know, swipe my debit card somewhere and not feel... Actually, I wanted a bank account. I didn't even have a bank account. That was what I wanted. My bank account, of course, got closed because of the wreckage of the past. You know, I wanted to be able to have my phone on and not have to be hitting ignore because every bill collector was on the phone with me trying to get their money. Like, these were all the things that I wanted. And, you know, they started to come in time. And, like, the beauty of this is, like, making amends to those people. Like, I hate giving my money to bill collectors, but with a little bit of time, I started to be able to take care of some of those phone calls. And, getting the keys to my first place, I share about it not because of the materialistic feeling of it, but the feeling of, you know, gratitude that I had. I remember standing in my kitchen of my first townhouse with my very first garage that I ever had in my whole life, and just crying and being like, you know, being so thankful that my higher power gave me this gift of recovery and gave me all of the circumstances leading up to me getting clean and gave me the journey that I had. I wouldn't change it for anything. Like, I didn't walk through early recovery perfectly, but I walked through it in my higher power's perfect plan for me, because the lessons that I've learned on my journey here are just, you know, they're invaluable to me. I, you know, I got better jobs and I got more job opportunities, and I, you know, went in for my first couple jobs telling them that, you know, I'm a recovering drug addict, and still having people hire me, and not only hiring me, but putting me in supervisor positions and stuff, you know, fully knowing my past. And it's only through step work. And I had my boss tell me, you know, I would have never ever hired somebody that I knew was an addict until I met you. She actually didn't hire me, the person before her did. And how awesome is that? Like, it's true what they say, like, we are representatives of Narcotics Anonymous. Like, people see me on the outside world, and I hope that I, you know, I don't want to give Narcotics Anonymous a bad reputation. Like, I hope that I live in a spiritual way that, you know, that gives this program justice. Working with steps has changed my life. Some of those relationships that I had, that, you know, picking up the pieces of those relationships, the relationship with my parents, you know, them taking their key back from me the week before rehab and then giving it back whenever I moved back in with them, and then asking it back again, but this time whenever they asked for their keys to their house back, they said, you know, we will always tell you where we have another one. I'm not asking for it back because I'm afraid of what you'll do. I'm asking for it back because I know you don't need this anymore. And that was just powerful for me too. You know, I've rebuilt relationships with friends. I had a best friend who absolutely, she stood by me and was there for me through whatever, but I completely, because of the disease of addiction, alienated myself from her relationship. We had never used together. We grew up three houses apart, and we were entirely different children, but she stood there for me, and I owed her some serious amends for the stuff that I put her through. Not that I did anything personally to her, but I can only imagine what it was like for her to watch her friend killing themselves, because that's what I was doing on a daily basis. And, you know, I finally made it to that step with either like 2.5, 3 years clean. And, I had learned through this process not to make amends before they're due, because I burned myself in the past with that one. And I learned that the steps come in order for a reason. But when I went to give her her amends, you know, what she said to me was so valuable. She told me, like, thank you for not saying I'm sorry earlier. She said that it meant more to her to see me live the life that I was living, and how many times that I've had her and my stepmom, who I call mom, you know, just tell me, like, I'm so thankful to have you back. And sometimes that bothers me, because I don't know that I'm back. I'm not the same person that I was even before I picked up the first one. I'm a totally different person. I've been through a lot of different experiences, and I've grown up in this program. I picked up the first one at either 12 or 13 years old, and got clean at 23, and like that's a huge chunk of time where we like develop as individuals. And I'm absolutely not the same person that I was whenever I came in, and I wouldn't want it any other way. I hated myself even before I ever picked up. I was not happy with anything in my life. I wanted to be skinnier, prettier. I wanted my teeth to be straighter, my hair to be different. Like, I wanted everything to be different. And, like, today, I'm okay with it. Like, God's blessed me in my life. And it's not just the physical stuff, but it's, like, the person that I am. Like, it used to bother me that I was a shy, soft-spoken person for the most part. But today, you know, I'm okay with it. Like, that's part of my personality traits. And, like, if I let you in, that means that I, like, trust you. And it's not just with people in the rooms, but it's with, you know, relationships with people that I work with. God's placed a lot of opportunities in my life. And part of this picking up the pieces thing, too, is, like, there are pieces that were there that I never knew were there to pick up. You know, my life is completely different. There was a lot more waiting for me than I ever anticipated. My relationships today are better than I never thought that relationships could actually be healthy. The examples that I was given, I mean, my stepmom and my dad, you know, they gave me a great example. They truly do love one another. But even then, like, I thought that, you know, people my age just don't do that anymore. You know, I watch other people that are older, and I just thought that, like, when you're young, like, there is no respect anymore because relationships have changed. But, like, I found today that that doesn't have to be the truth. Like, I have a man today that I am able to have open line of communication with. And, like, that was something that my higher power had in store for me that I would have totally missed out on had I not followed through with, like, what I was supposed to be on in this journey. I've been blessed with a stepdaughter today that's just, you know, I did not know that that was going to be part of my story. I did not expect to the love that I can have for somebody else. My heart absolutely swells. Like, bringing her up here this weekend is just the greatest blessing. You know, watching her wake us up at 6:30 this morning, but to see that smile on her face, like, we're camping. Like, she's so excited that we're camping, and, like, she's just, like, the greatest blessing that I could ever ask for. And watching her dad and the love that he has for her is just, it reminds me of the way that my dad took care of us, and I have so much gratitude. And, like, I don't know that I tell him enough, like, you've given her the greatest gift. Like, coming from a daughter from an alcoholic addict, like, that is the greatest gift that you can give your child, is the gift of sobriety, of being clean. And I just have the utmost respect for them and the utmost love, and I hope that I give back to them as much as they give to me. And it's, you know, I was never that selfless of a person. I mean, I still have some selfish tendencies, don't get me wrong. Like, I still want my sleep in the morning when it's time to get up for school, and, like, I still want some quiet time here and there. But, like, to hear this little girl call me mommy is just the greatest blessing. And, like, it reminds me, you know, not that I stay clean for her or for anybody else, but it reminds me, like, part of the blessings that are waiting for me through this process. And, like, I'm grateful, and it's just another reason to get another day clean. I'm very grateful to be here and to have spoken today, and I want to thank them for asking me. Thanks.
I would like to introduce the second speaker, Brian C., from Hugs Instead of Drugs group of NA in the central Westmoreland area of NA.
Hi, my name is Brian. I'm an addict.
Hey, Brian.
My clean date is March 23rd of 2010. Got asked to speak on picking up the pieces, and I really didn't think of anything I was going to say. All I can really do is tell my story and tell my experience, strength, and hope. I don't know, there's like one particularly big circumstance that led me to get clean, I believe. I don't know, I have a daughter, obviously, and part of my story is like, you know, I used drugs, you know, when I was 12 or 13 for the first time, and I used hard, and met a girl, basically, to make a long story short, met a girl, and used together, and we used hard together, and she got pregnant, and basically, it wasn't able to stop us from using. Like, my story is that, you know, it was always that we were going to quit the next day. It was always we were going to quit, you know, before her first trimester's up and, you know, the baby would be all right. Or we're going to quit, you know, tomorrow and everything will be all right. And just the days kept going by and we were never able to quit. And, you know, basically we used the whole time that she was pregnant with her. One day she might find out about that. I don't know, that's not really for me to worry about right now. I'll deal with that when that day comes. But the first day, like the night before my daughter was born, we were up until 4 a.m. smoking crack. And she was born 6 hours later at 10 a.m. on Halloween Day 2009. So basically, the Children's Bureau got involved right off the bat because they could just take one look at us and, you know, tell that we were addicts and tell that, you know, I was 150, 160 pounds at the time, looked like, you know, garbage, so did she. And, you know, they tested us. Obviously, she had some chemicals in her system and, you know, they tested me and they contacted the authorities right away and, you know, they wouldn't let us bring her home with us. Like, basically, my mom had to come in and sign her out of the hospital. And, you know, when you have a kid and you take her out of the hospital, the mother's, like, in a wheelchair holding a newborn baby, and that had to be my mom. And my mom was, like, at the time, 55 years old, and, you know, she had my newborn daughter in her holding her in the wheelchair, and me and my girlfriend at the time were kind of just walking behind her, you know, and basically, we all had to move in with them, and, you know, the Children's Bureau was drug testing us twice a week, coming twice a week and testing us, and we didn't slow down at all. It was basically just like we had a babysitter, and, you know, my parents had been through the ringer with me for years. You know, I was 24 at the time when she was born, and like, they had dealt with this with me with, like, the hard drugs for, you know, since I was 16 or 17 years old. So they knew my games. They knew, like, you know, what I would do. And, like, I didn't really hide anything from them. But we still kept ripping and running. And I don't know. Eventually, the Children's Bureau, like, after failing drug tests for 2 or 3 months straight, you know, failing two drug tests a week, they sat her down, and they're like, we're going to, you know, if this continues, we're going to push for termination of your parental rights, both of you. And they're like, your parents are going to get, you know, either your parents are going to get custody of her, or she's going to go into foster care, and that's it. And they're like, you know, the one guy, like, you know, God bless him, he looked right at me. He's like, you may not realize it now, but he's like, if you let this happen, he's like, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. He's like, that'll be the biggest mistake you ever made. And I don't know. At some time along the lines, like, she was probably 4 or 5 months old, the pain got great enough. You know, I reached that end of my rope. You know, I reached my bottom. It took years and years. I never really tried to get clean when I was using. I just went, and I didn't stop. You know, I went to rehab once when I was 18 in 2003, but it was pretty much just because me and all my friends decided to go to rehab together and, like, you know, to appease our parents. And I had no idea what addiction was about. I didn't know, like, what I had gotten myself into. I just thought, you know, you'd go to rehab, get out, you know, smoke pot and drink and be all right and be normal. But so I was introduced to this program at the age of 18, but I didn't get clean till I was 25. Basically, I'd reached that end of the rope, and like I reached that point of like utter desperation and that just that feeling of misery and hopelessness and just being completely dead on the inside. Like, I didn't have all these like horrible financial consequences and like, you know, felonies, and like I've never been to jail. That's not part of my story. My wreckage was like mostly internally and like mostly with like all the relationships with the people around me. One big consequence obviously was the Children's Bureau, and I don't know, something inside of me had just had enough, and I decided on my own terms to go to rehab. Me and her kind of went separate ways. I went to a rehab over here. She went to one over there. And when I got there, like, I just, like, felt in my heart that, like, I was ready to, like, give up. Like, to give up, you know, trying to use successfully because I could never do it. It kind of started hitting me that I had a kid and that I was 25 now at this point. And, like, I don't know, growing up, I had, like, the perfect childhood. Like, my family is amazing. They still are. My parents have a wonderful relationship. My father's been, like, the most amazing role model a guy could ever ask for. I'm truly blessed in that area. But, you know, I still ended up an addict just because, like, the choices I made, the people I hung out with, like, the decisions that I made led me to, like, where I was at. And, like, I don't know, my parents, like, they took me back in. I went to rehab, and I got honest with, like, everyone in there. I got honest with my counselors, with, you know, the people running the groups and stuff. I don't know, I was pretty miserable in rehab. I didn't like it. I'm not really a super social butterfly person, and, you know, people that know me know I'm not really flapping around talking to everyone. I'm pretty quiet, but, I don't know, in rehab there's a few people I opened up to, and, you know, I got honest with my counselor and told him, you know, I'm in a relationship and we have a 4-month-old child, and, you know, their Children's Bureau threatening to take her away from us, and all we've ever done together is use. That's all we know each other by, is, like, you know, doing drugs together. And he flat out told me, he's like, when you get out of here, you can't go back to her. He's like, you'll use. And I believed him. I knew he was right. You know, it was obvious. That's all we'd ever done together. We had one of the most, like, you know, sickest relationships. I'm sure all of you have been there, you know. It's like, it's part of the game of doing, you know, drugs and using. Relationships usually aren't any good. So when I got out of there, luckily my parents were willing to take me back into their house. Me and my daughter, who's 5 months old at the time, moved in with my parents. And technically, I wasn't even allowed to sleep there legally because, according to the, you know, Children's Bureau, I wasn't allowed to be living in the same house as her. So I would go over there all day, and at night I would go to my sister's house in Greensburg and sleep there. She had a little bed for me in one of her guest rooms, which I'm totally grateful. I'm sure she didn't trust me, but she was willing to give me a key to her house and, you know, let me sleep there at night. And that had been pretty scary for her because she's not an addict. She's a complete polar opposite of me in every way. And, you know, just knowing that she was, like, willing to do that out of love is amazing. For me, like, obviously my life was in shambles when I got clean. Like I said, I didn't have a whole bunch of legal consequences, and, you know, I wasn't homeless, living under a bridge or anything. I didn't know how to live, though. You know, I didn't know how to function in society. I didn't know how to hold a job. I didn't know how to be an adult. I didn't know how to, like, pay bills and, like, be responsible. And I definitely didn't know how to be a father. So, like, those are all things that, like, I had to learn. And, like, I did learn them in here. Basically, I had to strip my life down. Like, you know, they say about building a foundation. That was, like, so big for me. And, like, I think I did a pretty good job with it. I broke up with the girl. She got out of rehab and did her own thing, met a guy, fell in love, you know the story. But I didn't do that. I didn't even talk to girls, honestly. When I came in here, it was told to me to, like, you know, talk to men, and that's what I did. Like, I don't know, I had no interest in, like, meeting a girl at that time. I just got out in, like, the most miserable relationship in the history of my life, and, like, it was good to, like, not have to, like, be so codependent with someone for the time. It was good to just, like, be by myself, so, like, I kind of embraced it, you know. I went to a meeting the day I got out of rehab. That's my home group now. I walked in there and, you know, wasn't planning on talking to anyone, but there were some guys in there that, you know, talked to me, like, kind of came up and forced themselves on me, and, like, you know, that meant a lot. And, like, really, to me, that's, like, that really means a lot, because I know that's hard to do. Like, I need to do that more often. Like, I do try to do that, but, like, I know that's, like, an area that I fall short in sometimes is, like, you know, like, reaching out to newcomers, because I'm quiet, you know, and I'm, like, I don't know, I don't want to seem unapproachable or anything, because I'm not. I'm just quiet, you know, it's just how I am. But with that foundation, like, for me, I had to just, like, strip down my life. Like, I had to not work, because I couldn't handle a paycheck. I couldn't handle money. I couldn't handle any type of finances. I knew a paycheck meant I would go cash it and get high. And, you know, I was scared to death to use. I truly believe if I used again, I wouldn't make it back. I would die. You know, it took me 7-8 years to get into the rooms in the first place. Like, I don't think I would have another time getting clean in me. I had to get rid of my cell phone. You know, I've tried changing the number before, but, like, I could still pick up the phone and call a dope man. You know, I could still, you know, get a hold of someone if I wanted to. So for me, I had to, like, not have a cell phone. So I did that. I went to a meeting every single day. Every day, that was, like, my thing. I went to outpatient for a little bit because it was required to complete my, you know, little rehab thing I signed up for. So I followed through with it. I did that. Still continued to get tested by the Children's Bureau twice a week, but this time, like, I passed every one of them. And it was the same guy that would come to my parents' house to test me, that used to test me before I went to rehab. And I don't know, he told me one day, he's like, I can tell, like, you're doing it. He's like, I can tell that, like, something's different about you, and, like, you seem like, you know, you got this light in your eye now. And it felt good to never have to worry about that. Anyway, he would continue to come twice a week, and there was, like, certain things I had to do for them to, like, fulfill my thing to the Children's Bureau. It was, like, complete rehab. I did that. It was, you know, go to meetings, and, you know, I did have to get a slip signed for a couple months, but I was going to a meeting 7 days a week anyway, so it was no big deal for me. I had to do these, like, therapy sessions and, like, parenting classes where this woman would come over and, like, make me take tests and read pamphlets and answer questions and do little exercises and stuff, and I did the stuff, you know, even though, like, it was stuff that, like, was kind of common sense. Like, it was requirements from the Children's Bureau that I complete this stuff. So, like, I did it. And, like, I don't know. After a couple months, like, I would, you know, I got a sponsor, obviously. Got a home group. And, like, I started talking to, like, guys. You know what I mean? I looked up to guys that had clean time. Like, I'm really good at pay attention. I pay attention to people, and, like, I watch what they do. And, like, when people share, I listen to them, no matter who they are, no matter what, you know, I may think about them. You know, if I judge them, I try not to, but, you know, I'm human. No matter who they are, if they're sharing, I will listen, and I will get something out of it, because I feel that, like, everyone has something to offer. And, like, I never forget that, because, like, you know, a lot of times someone that I might not think too much of will share something that'll blow my mind, you know. I started to add little things into my life, like, you know, to pick up the pieces. I had to, like, not jump back into, like, working full-time right away and doing this and doing that. I had to, like, take baby steps. And that was, like, a lot through the guidance of my sponsor. We decided, like, between me and him that, like, when I had about 6 months that, like, you know, maybe I should start working because, you know, I am an adult. I do have a kid. Like, I need to work. So I got a job. And since I had built that foundation and since I had, like, taken that time for me to, like, strip my life down and, like, just go to meetings and, like, you know, make this second nature, staying clean, like, recovering, doing the whole, you know, recovery thing. When I got that first paycheck, I cashed it and just put most of it in the bank. And, like, using wasn't even, like, a thought in my mind. And that's, like, that's pretty big. That's a miracle, you know what I mean? That's, like, the biggest hope shot ever is, like, getting that first paycheck and, like, using not even being a fleeting thought, you know. I know for me that was huge. Another thing I like to do is I play music. I play, you know, death metal. As a lot of people know, it's, like, it's my thing. But I got into a band. That was something I lost during using, was, like, my ability to, like, you know, be in a band with guys, because, like, drugs had just, like, dominated my life so much that I ended up selling all my gear and I couldn't commit to, like, being in a band, you know, and, like, it just, that whole stuff had fallen apart. So when, also I had about maybe 5 or 6 months, I had met a guy in the rooms. He lives in Vandergrift now. He doesn't really come around much anymore, unfortunately, but he got me reintroduced to the music scene and, you know, got me in a band with him and introduced me to some guys I didn't know. And, you know, slowly but surely, I started to, like, build that part of my life back up again. It was good to, like, start to discover, like, who I really was, because, like, I came in here like a 25-year-old child. You know, like, I was legally and, like, technically I was a man, but, like, in no way, shape, or form was I any type of man. I wasn't a responsible parent. I wasn't, like, a productive member of society. I didn't know how to really take care of myself. I didn't know how to, like, you know, act. I didn't know how to, like, do anything. So, like, I wasn't a man. I was a child, basically. I had to learn how to be a man in here. And, like, step work did have a lot to do with that. You know, working the steps has, like, I haven't worked all of them, I'm going to be honest. You know, I'm slow with it. I do my best, but, like, it has definitely revealed stuff to me that, like, I would otherwise be unaware of. And even while I was writing out my steps on a lot of them, like, I wouldn't really be aware of what was being revealed until, like, me and my sponsor were going over it. And he would, like, pull that stuff out, and he would, like, bring things to the surface that, like, I was, like, unable to see. And it's pretty amazing how, like, that's able to happen. A lot of things about myself I found that, like, have held me back in life and, like, still are, you know, things that, like, I'm aware of now that, like, I need to change, and things that have, like, been holding me back from, like, progressing in certain areas of my life got brought to light through, like, you know, the fourth and fifth step, through my sponsor. Like, he brought it to light and it just, like, clicked, like, the, like, that's probably the reason why, like, I'm stuck in, like, the certain situation or something. It's probably because of this, you know, like, he helped bring those things to light for me. Basically, I don't know, I kept doing the things I was supposed to be doing, and the months went by, and I kept going to my, I went to a meeting every day probably for the first year, and that was good too. The whole 90 and 90 thing for me, like, it really makes a lot of sense, because for, like, a really shy, quiet person like me that's not really the type to go up and talk to people, it, like, forced me to, like, see the same people over and over again. And, like, after a while, like, inevitably, like, I got to know these people, you know, seeing them, you know, day after day, week after week. Like, even as shy as I am, like it forced me to get to know some guys in here. And, like, you know, if I hadn't been to going to meetings every day, I don't think that would have happened. I don't know, like, it's just amazing how much this has changed my life, like, this whole recovery process. I don't know, an amazing thing is, like, through, like, doing all the requirements for the Children's Bureau and, like, through, you know, staying clean, obviously, and working and, like, being able to provide, like, insurance for her and stuff. When I celebrated a year clean, it was March 23rd, 2011, when I celebrated a year clean, we had a court hearing on that day for the Children's Bureau, and they closed out my case on the day that I celebrated a year clean. I got custody of her. So, I don't know, that's pretty amazing from, like, in a year from going from, like, not even being able to, like, take her to the park by myself without my mom or dad, like, kind of holding my hand to, getting full custody of her. And I think that's what we did that first day that I was able to be alone with her. It was like we went out to eat at McDonald's or something, got her a Happy Meal, and then we went to the park or something. And it just felt amazing just to be able to, like, not have to ride with my parents, you know, like a child. That, you know, like, I was her father, and that, like, now I could, like, start to, like, do the things that, like, I'm supposed to do. I don't know. In a lot of ways, like, I honestly believe that she saved my life, because, like, I had no intentions on stopping. Like, I just figured I was going to be a junkie for the rest of my life, and, like, I was okay with it. Like, I was miserable, but it was, like, kind of the only way I knew. And I don't know. I really had no intentions on changing. I had no intentions on quitting. My parents expected me to die. I know that for a fact. They worried about me so much I can't even, like, begin to, like, try to make amends to them except for how I'm living today. I can just tell today that, like, they're proud of me and, like, they like the person I am, and they're, like, they know that I'm doing the right thing, and they tell me that a lot. You know, that's all I ever really want is for them to, like, be happy with the person they raised, because they did a hell of a job. You know, that's one thing I had to tell my dad when he came in rehab is, like, you know, this isn't anything you guys did. You know what I mean? You guys did your job to a T. Like, you guys gave me the perfect childhood. You know, part of them maybe thought it was their fault that I turned out like this, but I just reassured them that it definitely wasn't. And me and Audrina just basically went on living our life. You know, I still lived with my parents for quite a while. You know, I was all right with that. You know, they were all right with it. I was all right with it. I knew that's what I had to do. Saved some money, continued to make those little steps, and met someone, obviously. But I had some clean time when I met her. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't come into the rooms and, like, trying to, like, be a Romeo with all the girls and stuff. I was never like that. You know, I couldn't do that even if I had wanted to, trust me. But I met someone, and, you know, I think it was the right time for it to happen, because I never, like, really tried to force anything to happen. It's just kind of casual how we met, and I don't know, it just, you know, it happened. But it was a good thing, because she has brought so much good out of me that, like, I don't know, we're like a really healthy balance for each other. Like, certain areas that she's really strong in, I'm definitely not strong in, and I think I kind of mellow her out a little bit, because I'm a lot more laid back and nonchalant, and I kind of go with the flow a little more, and she's not like that. She's a go-getter. So I think, I like to think, I hope, like, I balance her out a little bit on that, but, I don't know, she was able to help me, like, move forward so much more in my life just by, like, opening herself up for, like, you know, if I have a kid and stuff. That was one of my biggest worries, like, you know, I might be a single father for the rest of my life, because, you know, who's going to want to, you know, be with someone that has a kid that's not theirs? But, you know, she's definitely taken on the role of stepmother, like, to a T, and she's a natural. So it's just, like, I know that when the time comes, that we have a child together, that, like, she's got it licked. You know, she's good to go. She's gonna know what she's doing. She's a nurse, so, like, you know, if she gets a boo-boo or something, like, we're good. Like, stuff like that, you know. I don't know. I'm still picking up some pieces of my life. Like, it's like I still have so much progress to make. Like I said, I haven't gone through all the steps. I'm maybe, like, halfway through. So it's like right now I'm starting to find out things about myself, but, like, I haven't, like, taken certain actions to, like, do stuff about it yet. So it's like this weird point, like, in my life right now where, like, I'm aware, like, these character defects and stuff, but, like, I haven't really done any action to, like, get rid of them or change them or anything. So it's like that tells me that I need to keep moving on them. And it definitely, like, I'm ready to. You know, like, I don't know, I've sat on step work for so long before, and it's definitely not something I suggest, especially sitting on, like, the fourth step or anything, because, like, just working that opened my eyes up so much about stuff. And, like, I know there's steps ahead that'll just keep that process going, and, like, I can't miss out on stuff like that. You know, that's what this is all about. In order for me to change and grow, like, I need to take advantage and, like, work the program. Like, the program's, like, all 12 steps, you know, and then they keep repeating. So, like, I need to do that. that's me basically just stating that out loud for myself more than sharing it with you, you know. But if I state it out loud enough, maybe I'll do something about it. I don't know. I mean, I owe my whole life to this program, honestly. Like, it's an honor to be up here. This is my fourth retreat. This is a retreat where I first, you know, met my significant other. And, you know, it's kind of cool to come back here to the place where we kind of started talking, you know. And to bring my daughter here because, like I said, she's like, you know, the circumstances surrounding, like, her birth and stuff, she's a miracle. She was born completely healthy, and I say it all the time, the fact that she was born completely healthy has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with, like, a higher power and a God of my understanding, because everything that we did should have caused her to be born with all kinds of, I don't even want to know. You know what I mean? Like that, I don't know. I saw something on Dr. Phil the other day that had, like, babies and withdrawal being born and stuff, and, like, it made me sick to my stomach. Like, it brought tears to my eyes, and, like, that should have been her, but it wasn't. And, like, she's a miracle, and, like, she honestly saved my life. I honestly believe if I wasn't, like, a father and she wasn't born, like, I'd probably be dead. That's my belief. So that also keeps me moving forward, though. Like, that's, like, I have so much to lose today that, like, using is, it just can't be an option. You know what I mean? For me to use once is to die. And, like, I can't do that to her. It's my responsibility to provide her with the best life that I'm capable of. My parents did it for me, and that's, like, my responsibility as a man is to, like, be there for her. And I'm going to do it. So, I don't know. I thank you very much for listening and having me share. So I hope someone heard something they need to hear. Thank you. Thank you.